What is up, boys and girls of the gambling world? We are back at the NFL Roundtable for week two, betting preview and analysis of all 16 games. Of course, every week at the beginning of the NFL season is 16 games before we get some of those bye weeks. I don't know about you guys, but those bye weeks would probably be a nice reprieve for me. I mean, 16 games is a lot to go through every week, especially coming off week one, right, where we just have a lot more information about these teams. Just seemed like a lot of teams kind of had a rough start, right? Like you could kind of see that lack of preseason play maybe coming into play there a little bit. Certainly some of those contract negotiations maybe slowing down some offenses in certain situations. But it was interesting to see the kickoff too, like a lot of starts from the 30-yard line, which I felt like kind of stimulated offense. I mean, we had an average total around 45, 46 in week one, and that was with some pretty low scoring games, some pretty defensive games in there. So a lot to unpack from week one. We have a fantastic panel for the NFL Roundtable week two. Some of the same dudes from last week that came on the show, and I would love to welcome them back. We have Patrick Gates at Gator Betting on X. We have Jake Circus at Jake Circus on X. Matt Rutledge is with us at ER Surgery. And joining us this week as well is a very special guest. He is the 2023 Circa Millions winner, which I think most of the gambling world now knows about Circa and everything that goes on there. So since we got some intros from the boys last week, just want to say hi to you, especially Matt. Thank you so much for joining us on the NFL Roundtable. All right, let's get to these games. Week one breakdown. We're going to get started. Buffalo Bills at the Miami Dolphins, ladies and gentlemen. It is Thursday night football. Miami Dolphins are catching a 2. 1.5 now is where that line is moving, showing some love for the Bills in this situation. Totals at 48, 49. I think the thought heading into that game initially was that Hurricane Francine or Francis or whatever's going on there was going to affect this game. I don't think that's going to happen. I think, it's on the other side of Florida. I'm seeing like 15% chance of rain. So that total going down from 51 is interesting in this game. But obviously two AFC East teams that's kind of started slow. We saw their offenses come together in week one. So let me start, since nobody had something specific to say about this game, let's just go around the panel here. I'll start with you, Patrick, top left of your screen, Patrick Gates. What do you got on the Dolphins and Bills on Thursday night?
Yeah, like you said, no play for me in this one, too. Pretty interesting week one matchups for both teams. The Bills obviously struggled to start, but kind of looked much better in the second half. It's going to be all dependent on their defense here. Their defense was injury-ridden to begin the season and suffered a few more injuries in week one as well. So I'm curious to see how they kind of match up against the Dolphins' offense, who should be a little bit better than the Cardinals that they faced in week one. Miami looked pretty good as well in that second half. If I had to lean on a play, I think it would go over in this one. But again, no official play for me here. So that's all I got. Chris, you're muted.
Oh, of course I am. And of course I'm talking a lot as I'm muted. Sorry about that. Guys, Jake Circus, let me pass it over to you. What do you think about this game? AFC East showdown, as always. We've seen a lot of points between these two teams before. Last few games or a pair of the last few games have been a little bit more defensive, but there was an asterisk, I would say, next to those. You have anything on the total in this game or from a sides perspective?
Yeah, I do. I played a little under before the big line movement. I got a 50.5. I think that we're going to see this new Bills offense on a national stage. The game against Arizona was kind of crazy. They found themselves in a huge hole early, and then they needed to play Josh Allen, needed to play hero ball, got himself back in the game. But when they were down 17-3, they only attempted 3 passes. So Joe Brady is really installing this new run game. I think the markets are starting to adjust a little bit now, but not enough. I still like it at 49, but I got a good 50.5 with this new Bills run offense and a Dolphins offense that could not run the ball at all against Jacksonville. These two teams are very familiar with each other. I think Buffalo will have a good game plan to, avoid any explosives that Miami has, and that's why Buffalo really has success against Miami, is because they stop those explosives. So I like a low scoring short week game here.
I like it. Matt Rutledge, what do you say? Dolphins, Bills, Thursday night football.
I lean over. I'm gonna be on Josh Allen interception. He didn't throw one last week, and he honestly looked great last week. I think throwing 2 against the Dolphins last year in the late game, in the end of the season, and they still won that game. I just think we see a lot of Josh Allen hero ball and just him throwing up not the greatest passes. this Thursday night. So I'm going to be on Josh Allen INT. It looks about minus 130 right now, so a little bit of juice, but I think it's pretty telling what's going to happen.
Yeah, and there's certainly a narrative, right, where you could see the Buffalo Bills kind of catching up to the Dolphins. I mean, they were catching up to the Cardinals last week as their offense kind of sputtered at first. Miami, South Florida, that offense at the very beginning of the year has been awesome. 3-0 starts for two seasons in a row. And, I personally, as much as Josh Allen, he always sticks out, right? Like, he's impossible to not be entertained by when he's on the screen in front of you. But, again, too much a reliance on Josh Allen in this offense. Keon Coleman looked good, but that's going to amount to some mistakes down the road, I think, to your point, Matt. All right, Matty Saint, close us out here. Dolphins, Bills, Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, I understand the line movement down on the under. I think both teams are going to want to run the ball. I could see Tua and that offense trying to exploit that new revamped back end for Buffalo. But I really think that the way that these teams are going to want to attack each other is on the ground, really, at the end of the day, especially with Buffalo losing Matt Milano. I know Daquan Jones is back from last year's matchup, so that could help the interior. But I think the edges is where the Dolphins could really exploit the Bills. I don't have an opinion on the side right now, but I do kind of lean to the under. I think more ball control, primetime unders right now on Thursday night.
I like it. Yeah, the middle of the field, too, I think could be exposed by the Dolphins' pass game. That might be something that they look at. Last season, third of the field on midfield passing game, seven touchdowns allowed to opposing offenses when Matt Milano was not on the field, zero touchdowns when he was on the field. So I think we're probably going to see a more significant effect of Matt Milano not being out there as well. Let's move on to Saints and Dallas Cowboys, 1 o'clock game. Cowboys -6.5 in this one is what I'm seeing everywhere. Totals around 45.5. And I'll start by saying this. Big LOL to supporters of the Panthers, I guess, in week one, which, listen, a lot of really sharp guys on the Panthers in week one talking about the Panthers heading into week one, but I didn't see a lot there to be impressed by. So was it the Saints just looking so much better with Clint Kubiak and a new offense and a defense that we already knew was going to be pretty damn good? Or was that just about the Panthers absolutely sucking and just being a terrible matchup against the Saints on the road? I tend to lean that way. Dallas Cowboys certainly looked impressive in all phases of the game. Micah Parsons was absolutely out of control. Offense actually looked in sync. Kind of a big LOL there too, right? To the spread itself, right? Because that moved in favor of the Cleveland Browns. And I know some guys I really respect in this industry loved the Cowboys last week. That turned out to be true. But now we're seeing that inflation happening, right? We're expecting Dallas to win by margin here in week two. So speaking about inflation and spreads and things that probably Matty Saint thinks about, over to you first here in this game, Matt. Cowboys and Saints, what do you got?
No, I think this is a kind of a week that the Saints come back to reality. I think that the matchup with Carolina was really, really advantageous for them. Carolina had zero on their D-line to pressure Carr. That's going to be the opposite in Dallas this week. I think Micah and the team are going to be able to put pressure. Carr is pretty poor once he does get pressured. Yeah, I think if they can take Olave out with Diggs on the outside, I think that they're going to be able to control the ball. I'm not a big fan of Dallas this year, but I think, they're going to get off to a good start here as long as CD's healthy and their O-line and D-line can hold up at the beginning part of the year. I think Dallas, I don't have a play on this one, but right now, early in the week and early in the process, I'd lean Dallas on the side here.
I would lean Dallas too, as gross as it is. And to your point, right, no Brian Burns might be making an instant impact there for the Panthers and their lack of pass rush on their end. Certainly Dallas Cowboys going to be coming at the Saints in this one. Let's go to Matt Rutledge, Cowboys Saints in Dallas. What do you got for this one, week two?
I'm going to lay with the Cowboys as well. I think the Saints should be nothing to be worried about. I have Saints wins under the season, and I'm not worried about it. That game last week, Saints-Panthers just was a definition of playing basketball against your little brother in the driveway. I mean, I'm not worried about anything there. I'm going to lay it with the Cowboys this weekend.
Okay, we got agreement on the Cowboys so far. Jake Circus, over to you. Saints and Cowboys, everyone liking them boys. What do you think about this one, Jake? I think we're getting some technical difficulties on Jake's end. So going right up to Patrick. Patrick, end us here on Saints Cowboys.
Yeah, I'm nervous because I think last week we were all in kind of sorts was the Titans minus or plus 4.5, and we saw kind of how that one ended. So that one was a wild card game. Yeah, I like the Cowboys in this game too. We saw Bryce Young struggle, especially against the Saints defense. And by no means are the Saints defense kind of one of the bottom tier defense, certainly kind of mid tier. But we're going to look at the Cowboys defense this week. I think they absolutely dominate that line of scrimmage, especially. So I like the Cowboys a lot this week. It's certainly interesting because the Saints are coming off that. I'm not going to call it a big win, but they did blow out the Panthers. And it's certainly kind of more indicative, I think, towards the Panthers than the Saints in terms of how their season is going to progress. We thought the Panthers might show a little bit signs of hope. I don't think they are this season by any means. And I don't think the Saints, maybe they'll contend for that division, but I don't really see too much out of them. I like the Cowboys. So right now it's 6.5 too. I'm probably going to use them in a 6-point teaser with a future game that we're coming up with as well. You kind of get a little bit of a better price on that, the money compared to the money line, and it's basically the same bet. So that's where my thought is on this game to start. The 6.5 I'm comfortable with, but I like a 6-point teaser better. That's kind of how I'm going to approach this game.
Yeah, I do think there are a lot of great teaser opportunities this week. That's for sure. I guess I won't give that away too quickly here, but definitely a few spots where you think it can happen. Jake, very quickly, what do you got on this Saints Cowboys game on 1 o'clock?
Yeah, I was able to hear everybody, but I guess I wasn't coming through. I'm with everybody 100%. Might even take a small consideration on taking Dallas and Survivor here. This is the spot for them. They're 67% laying touchdown or more under Dak Prescott or with Dak Prescott. This is a spot. We're getting Carolina in a super regression spot with just way more pass rushers on Dallas's side. I mean, you guys mentioned Brian Burns. Carolina has literally nobody. It's the worst part of their team, and they're probably the worst team in the NFL, and the worst part of their team is the pass rush. So Dallas will give that offensive line troubles all game.
Yeah, to Patrick's point, you know, the support for the Tennessee Titans last week on the show, I'm just going to play devil's advocate for the Saints here just a little bit, okay? Because if the Clint Kubiak, which that's a good family for offense, it's a smart NFL family, if that is working for Derek Carr, and if it can kind of have Derek Carr settle in and make better decisions, because Derek Carr's decision-making is what tends to be the problem in a lot of those games for the Saints offense. If that is streamlined, they have a lot of studs on defense still, and they're getting better. They could be competitive in this game against the Cowboys team, who we've seen it before. The Cowboys are riding high. They're feeling good about themselves. And then it all kind of like, you know, they get a little too big on themselves, don't they? So I guess as a Giants fan, selfishly, I'm hoping for that, even though the Giants have zero hope this season.
It happened last year, too. They had the big win against the Giants, and they laid the egg the next week against Arizona.
That's right. 41-0 wiped out the Giants in week one. Oh, I remember that game. And then you saw what Dallas did in week two. So thank you for bringing that up. Jake, okay, let's go Vegas, Baltimore. Baltimore has moved from I think it opened to 8.5, now up to 9.5. Maybe that gets to 10. I'm not sure. Totals 41-42. These poor Las Vegas Raiders have to go from facing Jim Harbaugh to John Harbaugh across the country. And let me tell you, I didn't see a lot to like about the Raiders last week. Of course, you got guys like Max Crosby, who's going to go crazy every game, right? He's a beast. They got some guys on offense, right? Like Jacoby Myers is a good receiver. Obviously, Devontae Adams, Brock Bowers is looking good. But do they have guidance and direct? Like, do they know what the hell they're doing on offense? I'm not sold on that at all. And now they have to face the Baltimore Ravens team, who you have to figure is ready to explode back at home after that near overtime or maybe even a win against the Chiefs on the road last week. Let's start this one with Matt Rutledge. Interesting game here. The biggest spread of the week on the Ravens, Matt. What do you got on this one?
Personally, I'm not going to bet this game. I don't feel comfortable laying the points with the Ravens. It actually gives me kind of the same vibes the Bengals last season. I think usually week one through three and four, we see the AFC North teams, the Bengals and the Ravens mostly, as heavy favorites, and it doesn't usually go well. So I'm just going to stay off this game.
Okay, let's go over to Matty Saint again. Again, Ravens being visited by these Las Vegas Raiders, and their perception is wide and far between these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, situationally, this is, you know, a great, great spot for Baltimore, 10 days of rest. The thing that gives me pause on why I probably won't bet this one is that right side of that Baltimore O-line looked really bad against Kansas City. And if you have Max Crosby and if they scheme up something, they might be able to keep it close. And that's the only thing that gives me pause. Otherwise, you know, this would be, a green light special for Baltimore all day. I'll probably be looking at them on my short list for Survivor. You have the close, you know, toe line catch by Likely that wasn't a touchdown. You know, they're ticked off. They're going to be ready to go. And Harbaugh on extra rest is, you know, usually, you know, a great play. So I don't have anything at the moment. You know, it's, I don't know, I saw it's 9 at Circa right now. So it is maybe not creeping up to that 10. I think it's just a terrible situation for Vegas though. Flying cross country with Pierce, who's a very below average coach. You could see the in-game situational coaching he had last week was abysmal. I don't know how that gets better anytime soon. And then you have Minshew under pressure, which isn't good. I think that Baltimore is sitting pretty. I just don't know if I feel comfortable right now laying the 9. Maybe throughout the week as I dig in more, I'll be there. There's no way I could touch Vegas in this spot though.
Yeah, Baltimore with some growing stars in their defensive line too. And I hear you with the Baltimore offensive line, totally agree. I do think that one thing that's going to be interesting to see this year is Lamar Jackson with his weight loss. He looked fast. I mean, he's always fast, but holy shit did he look fast in that first game. I think it could be a big year for Lamar. I mean, kind of as usual at this point. Patrick, you got anything on this one? Vegas and Ravens.
Yeah, no, I lean the under in this one too. We saw the Raiders offense with Minshew at the helm struggle, put up 10 points against the Chargers defense here. I think Baltimore's defense is a little bit better than that as well. And then again, too, that Ravens O-line, just so many penalties, especially in week one, which is not really like them to begin with. So I think the Ravens obviously control the majority of the scoring here. I think we see I think the Raiders maybe put up around 10 again, maybe this week, if that, but I do lean the under this one at 41.5. I think the Raiders defense should be able to get some pressure on Lamar. So I don't mind that number.
All right, Jake, send us home quickly here on the Vegas Raiders and Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah. I mean, this is a spot I would normally try to play Vegas, but I have no interest. Think that as the season goes on, their new offensive weapons and, you know, kind of a revamped defense will get better as the season goes on. And I'm going to look to fade Baltimore throughout the year. I don't think that they're nearly as good as last year, but this is not the spot to do it. If you do want something for Vegas, Lamar's 28-5 straight up as a touchdown favorite, but only 16-16 against the spread. So this will be the spot to do it, but I have no interest.
All right, let's move on. I'm going to go right back to you, Jake, because you have circled, for some reason, my New York Giants at the Washington Commanders. I tell you what, on the one end of the spectrum, my Giants, I was at least expecting, like, I don't know, just like some kind of fired up Daniel Jones and maybe a fired up defensive line. Defensive line only gets one sack. Daniel Jones looks like shit as usual. And then on the other end, the Washington Commanders, you know, I was also really excited to see Jaden Daniels, but clearly there's some work to be done there on that one. Washington 2.5-point favorites at home. I think that number may be moving down at some books right now and totals around 43.5 to 44. What do you got on this one, Jake?
Yeah, it doesn't look like we're going to get a 3 with the Giants. I mean, I'm seeing consensusly 1.5 right now. So, I mean, 2 is a key number now in the NFL. So just try to get 2 or 2.5. But this is like a big week one overreaction. I mean, yes, the Giants looked as bad as they could be against Brian Flores' defense. But, you know, I look at what Washington did and a lot of people are talking about Jaden Daniels, and I thought he looked good, especially, you know, in the fourth quarter. He had a couple of touchdowns in the garbage time. Oh, I think it was one touchdown, but a lot of yards in the garbage time. But we were seeing a lot of Washington's defense on the field. They allowed 9 of 13 third down conversions against a Tampa team that's not supposed to be nearly that good. I think this is a, you know, good buy low spot for a Giants team that think has gotten a little too much disrespect, which is kind of crazy, but think the hate has gone a little too far. We're getting them as a dog here. I expect the Giants pass rush to be in full force against this horrid offensive line that Washington's putting out there in front of Jaden Daniels. So that's the matchup I look to. I'm getting them as a dog. You know, Daniel Jones is still a professional quarterback. There were some throws that he just missed, like they were close to being good, and you know, rewatching that game, I was like Daniel Jones normally makes these throws. It was like an uncharacteristic bad game from Daniel Jones, which is, you know, not saying much. But I expect the Giants to bounce back in this spot. I'll take him as a dog.
And the Giants did bounce back last year after that huge loss. Daniel Jones went to Arizona, played really well. Obviously, I mean, especially New York, New Jersey is watching Daniel Jones, and they're like, something good has to happen here or else we're going to get really sick of this really quick. And I would say second to him, obviously, is that defensive line, which you talked about, Jake. Maybe they have a field day, and maybe they have massive regression here in week two against Washington. And I must say, if there's one team the Giants have had success against the last 5 or 6, 7 years since the Giants have not been very good, it's Washington. For some reason, we always play better than the Washington Redskins / Commanders the last 5 to 8 years or so. So we'll see in that one. Matt Rutledge, let's talk Giants Commanders here. You got anything for us?
I would have thought this line would have been a little higher for the Commanders with how good Jaden Daniels played last week. So I think this line is really short. I would gear towards the under in a divisional battle, but I'm good on this game.
Just a stay away for you. Got it. All right, yeah. Matt Saint, over to you, Giants Commanders.
Yeah, I won't touch the sides on this one. I think it's just two below average teams. I'm actually looking towards the over. So I'm going to go the opposite on this. I thought that Washington's defense looked abysmal, and I'm not high on Baker in that Tampa offense. I know they have skill position. So I think I'm expecting Daniel Jones to have a little bit more of a breakout this weekend. I think this is going to be the neighbors' breakout. And then I think we saw last week with Daniels, he's got that ability to make things happen when there's nothing there with his legs. And I think that, you know, if they get behind, they're a good team to be able to catch up. I think they're going to be able to put points on the Giants secondary as well. So I'm just looking at that total. I think it's going to be, you know, something more like 24-20, 27-21. I just think that 43.5 is just a touch light.
Yeah, I think Jaden Daniels is only going to get better and better too. I liked a lot of what I saw from him. Obviously, it's your first NFL game, right? It's not going to be easy for anyone, but the kid has poise. And I agree. Hopefully we see just a little bit better from Daniel Jones in week two. Patrick, send us home here, Commanders Giants.
Yeah, I agree with everything Matt said in that one too. I think this is a perfect spot for Daniel Jones week two to kind of bounce back, especially against a weak Commanders defense here. So I do lean over on this one as well. And Jaden Daniels showed enough in week one to prove that he is still kind of growing as a quarterback, but he's also capable of playing at the NFL kind of in his first career start. So I don't mind the over at 44 in this one.
All right. Got some overs in that game. Let's move on to the Los Angeles Chargers at the Carolina Panthers. And before I do that, just want to acknowledge we have over 200 people viewing on Twitter. We appreciate everyone listening and viewing us live. Again, this will be available via YouTube and podcast after this show as well. And I'm going to start this game, boys, talking a little assertively, okay? Because you look at that LA Chargers locker room. I'm not sure if I've seen a more drastic transition in culture from Brandon Staley, who, I mean, I never liked Brandon Staley. The guy looks like he's 130 pounds soaking wet. Like, I'm not sure why anyone, like, it's no wonder why players can't relate to him. At the same time, you know, from that administration to what we're seeing from Jim Harbaugh already, right? Team coming together, team excited. He's making leaders accountable on his team already. But are we seeing too much inflation here, right? Because immediately the Chargers go to 6.5-point road favorites. Now, I know Carolina didn't give us a lot to think about in that last game, surely, but you can't ignore what's happening there with the LA Chargers just as becoming a professional organization. You can love Jim or you can hate Jim, but the players buy into what he's doing. And I you know, for the most part, that is one of the most important things about betting NFL football, right? It's an organizational thing. It's a culture thing. We see that every single week from teams like the Kansas City Chiefs. Jake, you have a play in this game and you want to talk about it first. So I hand it over to you. Are you going to hate on Jim? Are you going to keep hating on Jim, Jake?
No, I won't hate on Jim this week, but I will wait for the 7 here and I'll take Carolina. I'm not rushing right now. This isn't like a bet like it was last week where I liked him throughout the summer. We're going to see improvement eventually, and maybe it's just, I'm just insane. But you know, everything that I've ever seen in the NFL proves that like this team is going to improve slightly and they are still undervalued in the market. So if I get a 7, I'll play it. If I don't, I'll probably still play it. The Chargers as a touchdown favorite is, I mean, inexcusable, in my opinion. I'm still low on this team. I still don't think they have any playmakers on offense. The interior of the line is terrible. So maybe better matchup for Carolina's non-existent pass rush, but I just think it's too much inflation. This line was 3 a couple days ago. I still would probably lean Carolina in that game. So now we're getting 6.5. Hopefully we get 7. I'll play it there. It won't be a contest pick, but it'll certainly find my card if it gets to 7.
Yeah, you hear a lot of, or you see a lot of arguments on Twitter, on X, about this sort of thing, right? It's like numbers versus teams. You know, what we see in the field versus the point spread, right? And this is certainly inflation, especially after week one. So from a points perspective, I absolutely align with you on that, Jay. That is a lot of points being given to the Chargers immediately after we just saw them one time. Let's go up to Patrick for this game, Panthers-Chargers, Carolina with their home opener.
Yeah, it's a complete stay away from me. Obviously, the Panthers looked horrendous in week one here, but the Chargers themselves didn't show me enough that they deserve to be 6.5, 7-point favorites in this matchup at all. I could see them winning by a touchdown here. I'm not touching this game, not by any means.
All right, over to Matt Rutledge. What do you got? Panthers and is it Chargers we're still talking about? Yeah. a lot of teams in my head. Go ahead, Matt.
I have nothing in this game as well, but Chris, let me ask you a question. What do you think this game, what do you think the line would be if the Chargers were at home this week?
Ooh, that's a great question because not a lot of home field advantage there for the Chargers, but that's interesting because I think it would be, I mean, in my mind, it should be probably very similar to this, right? So I think a road dog like this, or not a road dog, but a road team like this, even against the Panthers, it shouldn't be up to 6.5. You know, it shouldn't
that's
be up
why
to six
I think
and
it's weird
seven.
As well.
Yeah.
Stay away from me. I just had that in the back of my head. So
I like it. It's a good question, Matt. And then over to the other Matt, Matty Saint. Anything else left to say about this one?
Yeah, like at first I was looking at this as a perfect buy low opportunity on Carolina, just with the inflation. The Chargers don't have field stretchers like New Orleans did with Shaheed and Olave, so I feel like it could be a better matchup. But then I think that their D-line can still get just bullied at the line of scrimmage. I think the Chargers could run the ball 40 times on Sunday and actually cover this number. So for me, it's a stay away. If I were to play it, I'd probably only look at the Panthers side of it just because of the inflation. And I don't think the Chargers really have the horses to win by double digits. So I think it could be a closer game. Also probably lean towards the under. I think both teams are going to probably want to run the ball and get out of there.
Yep, I agree with that. And this definitely qualifies as like that ugly game, that ugly point spread that nobody wants to take, but might be the difference, right? Especially in like a circa contest or something like that. Right, as everybody kind of looks for something that they think is easier to take in week two, and then a lot of things shift. Let's move to the Indianapolis Colts to the Green Bay Packers. I won't start this off by saying anything. There's a lot to unpack in this one. I do see Jake again wanted to talk about this one. Jake has a lot of the early games that he highlighted, not so much at the end. So we'll go to you first, though, Jake. Colts visiting the Packers, and Jordan Love is doubtful. I mean, I'm surprised they're not just listing him out because I don't think we're going to see him in week two.
Yeah, this is another, you know, bet the number spot for me. It's the Packers at home against a Colts team that I'm high on. I expect the Colts to be super competitive all year like they were on Sunday. They got there, the 2.5 for us, or for those of us who had it. But now going like on the road, Lambeau, tough spot. Like even though Love's not playing, I expect Packers faithful to be high and out there. Over in Lambeau. So this is another number spot at 3.5. I don't care who's playing quarterback on the other side. I'm just going to close my eyes, take this number at 3.5. A Colts team that I, again, higher on the market, but do not think they should be laying 3.5 points on the road. There's some still 3.5 there. I see ESPN, MGM have some slightly juiced 3.5. So I would take it there. Would still lean Packers at 3, but think that they find some success on the ground in a slower, more high variance type game. Joe Mixon ran for 160 yards on this Colts defensive front. They're supposed to be better than that, but maybe Gus Bradley's losing his touch. I'm not sure. Something to keep an eye on, but Packers plus the points is certainly a good spot for me.
Yeah, Houston ran for 213 yards on the Colts last week, right? So definitely something the Colts are going to want to improve. On the other hand, man, Malik Willis, when I've seen him on the field, tough to trust that kid. Obviously, the athleticism is there, but I'm not sure from, you know, understanding the playbook and making the right throws. So that's what makes this one tough for me. But again, that's a football perspective. I respect that you stick to your numbers, Jake Circus. At the end of the day, that's what it's about, the point spread. Let's go up to Matty Saint for this one, Colts at the Packers.
Yeah, Jake made some great points. I make this game Indy minus one, and they're getting three, and it's shaded towards going to 3.5 at Circa right now. I'll probably be a stay away, and it's just basically because of Malik Willis. I just don't trust him. I know that he was on Tennessee the last couple of years, and there's not a lot of talent compared to what the Green Bay Packers have. So I think that with Matt LaFleur and those skill players, they have a better opportunity for Malik to flourish. So, but they also had trouble getting home from Brazil, and that whole travel and getting caught up. There's just a lot of weird things with the Packers right now that just make me a little bit squirmish to want to play them this week. And then I also don't think Indy should be favored by 3.5 on the road. So to me, it's going to be a stay away, but it's a super intriguing matchup. I wish I had a better thought on it. I think there's just so many variables on both sides that I'm just going to enjoy the game and hopefully see Richardson beat the Packers.
Yeah. So many variables. And I'm glad you brought up Anthony Richardson, because, you know, you look at his stat line from last week, 9 for 19, but 212 yards. And I mean, I kind of want to do a visual demonstration. I can't on this tiny camera, but that guy was moving backwards when he threw the ball 65 yards in the air, guys. So, I mean, you know, we're talking about the kind of dude who, like, when you were in high school and he was in high school, you go to the park and you're like, I can play. I'm a good athlete. I can play football. And then you go up against that guy and you see him on the field. And you're like, no, I fucking can't. I can't go to the NFL. So Anthony Richardson, I'm already making a case for one of the most entertaining players in the NFL. And Green Bay's defense didn't give me a lot to trust last week. That might have been more about Philly, too. They certainly showed up and played strong. But interesting one. And yeah.
Comment. Sorry, oh, yeah. Chris. Well, just like the one thing in the back of my mind that also will give me pause of playing Green Bay, though, is we saw what Saquon and that offensive line did for Philly. And I think the Indianapolis Colts have just as good of an offensive line and just as good of a running back with Jonathan Taylor. I think they're going to deploy that same game plan and see if they can stop them. So that's another reason why I'm just going to stay away, because I think Steichen and that team are going to have a great game plan.
Yeah, probably part of why the total's so low too, right? Just a lot of running probably projected in this matchup. Let's go to Patrick, Colts, Packers.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth here. I do like the under here at 40.5. I do see this as kind of a big running matchup. Josh Jacobs is probably going to be the main, the key focus of that Green Bay offense. Like you said, Jake's a better than I am in terms of this, of sticking to his numbers here, because watching Malik Willis play, I just can't put any faith into that quarterback right there at all. There's certain guys that you look at and they're just like, he shouldn't be on the field right now. But unless Green Bay makes a change or kind of picks up one of those free agents, I don't see kind of this number moving too much, maybe towards the 3.5, 4. But yeah, I like the under here. And like you said, too, I think this is going to be a ground and pound game for both teams here. The number right now on DraftKings is 3, which I don't mind laying. But again, that's going to be a lean for me. I'm going to pretty much try to stay away from this game as no official pick.
Okay, but we like the under in that game. Finally, Matt Rutledge, wrap us up here. Yeah. Packers-Colts.
It's the only thing I bet so far this week. I'm taking the Colts -3. I think Malik Willis is going to play regardless, and I have no interest in Malik Willis. I don't think he should even be playing. I think the Colts are a way better team. They gave me a lot of hope last week. Give me the Colts -3.
All right, I like it. We got some disagreement on this show. That's what we need from the NFL Roundtable. You'd love to hear all sides. Let's move on to San Francisco at Minnesota. San Francisco fresh in our minds, obviously, coming off Monday Night Football. I mean, what a buttoned-up program, right? They're just a professional football team full of great leaders. They know what they're doing. Like, if you listen to that Fred Warner speech before the game, it's no wonder why they played so well. They are up to 6.5-point road favorites, totals 44.5 to 46 range. And I see Jake and Patrick have highlighted this game. So let's go first to Patrick on 49ers Vikings.
Yeah, I'm shocked. Good Morning Football didn't start the narrative with the Sam Darnold revenge game this week here. That being said, I love the 49ers this week here. I don't think Sam Darnold will be able to kind of take advantage of that Giants defense like he did last week. San Francisco is a much better defense. Their offense is much better. Just an overall better team. I think this is kind of a wake-up call for the Vikings riding high after their week one victory. I think San Francisco kind of knocks him back to earth here. I have 6 right now, which I love. 6.5, not so much. But yeah, I'm probably one of my best bets of the week. It's going to be San Francisco -6.
Yeah, the Vikings dominated the Giants, but it's the Giants.
Right? Yeah, this Sam Darnold come down game for sure.
Yeah, they certainly – the Giants did not look prepped for that first game, which, you know, Brian Daboll, maybe stop investing so much money in, like, the next pair of shades. And, you know, let's like – get things going there for New York. Can you tell him a little pissed about how the Giants started? Jake, you also have something to say about this game, Minnesota and San Francisco. Jake, over to you.
I don't think I did. I don't have anything on this game. I think the number is right with the kind of, you know, performance that we saw from both these teams. I love both these coaching staffs. I think Darnold is going to be better than what we thought preseason, but he's not going to be the, you know, number one PFF quarterback all year long, and this is obviously a really big leap in competition. I think this number is right. Can see, you know, San Francisco just really, you know, getting off to a hot start, covering once again in this kind of maybe a sleepy spot, but I got nothing on this game. I think the line's right.
It's just hard not to trust San Francisco after what they did in week one, especially against the Jets defense, where, I mean, I came into this season telling everybody, which is not a hot take, that the Jets are the best defense in the NFL. You know, certainly what I thought heading into it, you wouldn't know that up there at the Bay last night in Monday Night Football. Let's go to Matt Rutledge. Anything on this one?
Nothing.
Stay away from Matt Rutledge. I like it. Nice and short. That's what we need for the efficiency of this show. But I will just say before I pass it to you, Matt, he's saying, and just to play devil's advocate too, you talk about the ultimate, like, this is kind of the start of San Francisco's rough schedule, right? You got a short week. You're going to a team that you probably really don't give a shit about. And then you got to go back out west next week to play at the Rams. So 2 straight road games. Now, San Francisco usually very buttoned up, but we've seen them have trouble with those situations before. Maddie Saint, what are you thinking about this one?
Yeah, so if you rewind the clock to last year, San Francisco comes to Minnesota on Monday Night Football without Trent, I believe, and without Debo, I believe, also. And they were 5-point favorites, and Minnesota walked out outright winners. But a couple things in that game were interesting. McCaffrey and the Niners were marching down first drive of the game, and they fumbled at the 5-yard line. And then right before halftime, Jordan Addison stole the ball on, like, basically just a prayer from Kirk Cousins. They ripped out of the hands of I can't remember who the cornerback was, and housed it right before halftime. And so that's basically a 14-point swing, and that's the difference in the game. I think this is a wake-up call for the Vikings as well. I'm a huge Vikings fan, and I just know that this is kind of the week where, after a big win and trying to be impressed, or they were impressive on Sunday, this is the week where, you know, the things kind of come unraveling for them traditionally. So, you know, I'm looking towards the Niners. I think they looked super impressive last night, especially with their ground and pound. I just thought that was that was just world-class against the Jets defense. And then even without CMC going in, you know, the performance from Mason last night, I think Ayuk will be better conditioned come this week. And I just think their talent overall is going to be too much for that Viking secondary. I think Daniel Jones and the skill set for the Giants played into Flores' hand last week. I think he's going to have his hands a lot more full, and I think San Francisco is going to remember coming to Minnesota last year and losing outright as a 5-point favorite.
I like it. I like it. All right, let's move on to Cleveland and Jacksonville. Jacksonville continues to be one of the more perplexing teams for me. Like, one drive, they look pretty damn good. The next drive, they do not look good at all. Their defense was impressive, at least at the beginning of that game against Miami last week. They're hosting Cleveland, and they are 3.5-point favorites off of Deshaun Watson looking like a ghost out there for the most part of week one, and Cleveland defense letting down. I got Jake and Patrick on this one as well. So, Jake, I'll start with you on this one. Browns and Jaguars, what do you got?
Yeah, games like this are why I'm glad we do this show Tuesday morning. This line opened 4. I played it there. It's now down to 3 at some retail books. Three and a half are still out there. I think the Browns are getting points in this game, and they're the better team. And it's over both, you know, three and three, or it's over three. You know, I'm lucky that I was able to get it Sunday night at a good plus four. This is a great matchup for Cleveland's defensive line. I mean, they played really well. Dallas's offense averaged, I think, less than 4.5 yards a play in that game. You know, they had the punt return touchdown, obviously. Dallas only had two, you know, I think two good drives that whole game. So Cleveland's defense, I think, is getting some, you know, some unnecessary hate just because of what the offense did. But, you know, that Deshaun Watson was worse than the Watson pre-injury last year. So he'll get better. It's still not going to be the elite Deshaun Watson. But, I mean, I think the better team is getting points here.
Yeah, and, you know, a few injuries to their offensive line last week, too, right? I think, like, 60%, three guys were out.
Yeah, Wills, I think, is still going to be out. Maybe Conklin comes back. Certainly was a horrible matchup week one against Dallas. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Terrible matchup, but Jacksonville's defensive front is looking a little better, too. So I wonder kind of how that one pans out. Let's go to Patrick, Jaguars and Browns.
Yeah, despite Jacksonville's defensive line looking a little bit better, it's still not the same as Dallas's here. I'm with Jake on this one. I like the Browns here in this spot. I wish I grabbed it at four. I got it at 3.5 in this one, which isn't as good, but still across that number, which I was hoping for. Yeah, I think we see a bounce back here. And it's more so Browns obviously kind of laid a stinker in week one. Dak looked pretty well. And overall, just, I mean, the Cowboys, especially last year on the road, were horrendous. This year, they looked much better off the start. I don't know if it was kind of mainly just Cleveland or themselves, but it'll be an interesting matchup for them in week two itself. Trevor Lawrence just can't close out a game, it feels like. He has been the guy who we've thought is going to take the next step for the past, 3 to 4 years. Yeah. Obviously, huge recruit out of high school, huge recruit out of college. Like, he has been that guy that the Jacksonville Jaguars wanted. Everyone thought he would become this guy, and he's just not. He's not this guy. Cleveland's defense should be much better in this matchup here. Jacksonville's wide receiving core really wasn't a factor, it felt like, in that first one either. So I like Cleveland here, +3.5. So that's what I'm on.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence and that Jaguars offense in the second half, they had one good drive that went about 97 yards, I think. The rest of their drives in the second half against what I still consider a very average Miami defense, 10 yards. Except for that one drive, right? So just completely kind of spoiled out, right? Just kind of fell from what we saw in the first half. I thought that was looking like a much better Jacksonville Jaguars team, and that's kind of the same old from Trevor Lawrence and the offense in the second half. Let's go to you, Matty Sain. This is a tough one for me just because there's a lot of variables and a lot of sell signs in these two teams already.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's kind of just one of those games I'll probably just stay on the side. I don't really have an opinion on it right now.
Love it. Okay, the other Matt Rutledge, Browns, Jaguars at, where is it? It's at Jacksonville, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I had the Jags +3.5 last week. That was sweaty. Probably shouldn't have even hit, honestly. I'm not going to back the Jags again. I lean Browns, but as of right now, nothing. It seems like you should take the Browns for all the right reasons, but I just can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree that I don't think the Jacksonville Jaguars quite deserve this spread just yet, right? I mean, certainly not coming off a loss, certainly not what they showed us in the second half. A lot of this is probably selling stock on the Cleveland Browns. But, hey, last year, Kevin Stefanski, right, AP Coach of the Year. I mean, this was a team that made the playoffs, did they not? So am I making that up? Guys, there's so much information in my head. Don't answer me. Let's just move on. All right, Seattle, Seahawks and Patriots. This is another Jake and Patrick special. Patriots were catching 3.5 at home. Total opened at 41 and now is down to 38 for understandable reasons. Let me go to you first, Patrick, on Seahawks and Patriots.
Yeah, what an interesting game, not so much for the viewer perspective, but with Seattle and Denver last week. Denver's defense looked much better than I expected. I'm not sure if it was just Seattle's offense looked poor. So that's kind of something I'm considering this week. The Patriots felt like they had everything that could go right for them went right for them, right? Like, they got that timely turnover on the goal line here. They were able to kind of stop this Joe Burrow-led offense, who he thought he was coming back from injury, is going to be much better this season. and it just wasn't. But we've seen the Bengals struggle in week one before. So while it is kind of that, I like Seattle in this one too. I like Seattle minus 3 in it here. I think it's up to 3.5 now. I didn't bet it yet. So if it does come back down to 3, I will take it. But at 3.5, I'm probably going to hold off. I can see this being a field goal game here. I just think the turnover luck for New England week one, they're getting up for their new head coach here. I think they like him a lot. I think they play for him, but I think Seattle kind of goes into Foxborough and ruins this home opener for the Patriots. So if it moves back to 3, I'm going to take it. But if it doesn't, I'll probably get a layoff on this game.
Yeah, very, very interesting what's going on with the Patriots, because looking at Gerard Mayo and what was happening, like, you know, they get rid of Judon, right? You're kind of thinking maybe they're, you know, selling this season. They start Jacoby Brissett. The thing about Jacoby Brissett is, like I said last week, he's a stabilizer. Like, he's not going to make the worst plays, not going to make the best plays, but he can win for your team. And that defense looks fierce. But to your point, Patrick, it's the Bengals week one, right? Which, by the way, 32% of Circa Survivor was eliminated week one because of the Bengals, and all over the world because of those Cincinnati Bengals. But yeah, it happened there week one, but it is the Bengals, right? And they kind of do that at the start of the last few seasons. So how much do we believe what we saw from the Patriots and how they can keep that success going? Seattle, kind of a clunky start too at the start of last week and then pulled it together. Jake, you got to play in this game as well.
Yeah, it's I got Seattle at 3. I'm hoping this is going to be one of those games where there's enough money coming in on the Pats at 3.5, where it kind of comes back to 3, and I can get that in contest. I'm not rushing to take it at 3.5 in the contest, but I do have it at 3. I think that Seattle shot themselves in the foot. I mean, so many times in that first half, they should have won that game by upwards of 20 points. Geno really turned it on, looked much better in the second half. And, you know, on the other end, I'll throw a few stats out there. The Patriots had the worst pressure rate on defense, and they allowed the highest pressure rate of opposing defenses, or of the Bengals defense in week one. So, you know, kind of what we expected with this Patriots team. They're not going to be very good in the trenches, especially after trading Judon away. The offensive line is patchwork at best. And, you know, those Seahawks, they got some dudes up front. Boye Mafe, unbelievable performance in his, I think he started his second year. He had 8 pressures against the Broncos, who are a better offensive line than what this Patriots team is. So I think the travel spot is a little interesting for Seattle. So that would cause me to not want to take it in contest at 3.5, but I love it at 3.
The NFL somehow knows how to create like perceptual variance here, right? Because like, you kind of want to take Seattle, but they are going across the country. I mean, again, it's another tough spot, which a lot of those West Coast teams don't do very well. And I will say about the Patriots, you're right about their pressure rate. I did see at the very end of that game, though, they were getting pressure on Joe Burrow when it mattered. So you love to see that kind of contextual thing happen for a defense that can step up in big moments. Matt Rutledge, Seahawks, Patriots in New England. What do you got here?
Well, I'm not going to give credit to the Patriots last week, but more so how bad the Bengals were. Joe Burrow had the ball like 30% of the game. And with all the other time, the Patriots could only put up 16 points. I think the Seahawks defense, you know, giving up 2 safeties, there were so many errors they made in that game. The late touchdown by Bo Nix for the spread cover. I think the total's telling how this game's going to go. I lean under, and I think we've seen too many games in Foxborough play out. I just think I like under, and I lean Seahawks. I'll probably be on Seahawks spread.
Okay, I like it. And end us here at Matty Saint, Patriots, Seahawks.
Yeah, there's minus 3 at Circa, shaded minus 120 to might go to 3.5 soon. So I'd probably play the minus 3 if you can get down. I'm in Minnesota, so I can't bet, but that's where I'd go. I looked at the Patriots and how they won last week. They won by fluke turnovers, and then they won by running the ball up the gut. And Seattle's going to be able to stop the run a lot better than Cincinnati has. I think Cincinnati was really missing DJ Reader in the middle of that line. And I think the Patriots knew how to control the ball and keep the ball out of Burrow's hands. I think that's going to be harder with Mike McDonald, that D coordinator this week, and a lot more talent on the Seattle defensive side of the ball. I think they have enough offense, a lot more skill players than what Cincinnati went to the table with last week too. I mean, Chase had food poisoning, no T. Higgins, they're running out Ishvish and Trent Irwin, and you know, kind of Zach Moss, and like it just seems like Seattle's skill players are greater than what Cincinnati rolled out last week. And even though Geno's not a great quarterback, I think they're going to be able to manage that game and win by margin.
All right, we have scary consensus here about the Seattle Seahawks going into New England. Jake, did you want to? Or I'm sorry, Patrick, did you want to add something?
Yeah, the Kenneth Walker injury is also something to monitor too this week. Yeah. I know he's listed as questionable right now, so I just want to point that out. And then again, Jacoby Brissett is like, it's a weird comparison, but he's like Gardner Minshew to me in terms of they're a quarterback that's not necessarily going to fully kind of, it's not a quarterback that you're going to kind of build your team around per se for the next 5 to 10 years, but he is going to win in those weird spots. And that's what we saw in week one.
Yep, absolutely. He's going to just take advantage of those spots, right? Yeah. He's not going to will the team to win, but he's also not going to make the biggest mistake either. Just as a reminder to our audience, we're over 400 people watching on X, so really appreciate everybody listening in. This will be available, again, via podcast and YouTube as well. And last week, we went over our best bets kind of throughout the show. I'm going to ask at the very end of the show what everybody's best bet is. I think that's a little bit easier to do as we wrap up everything at the end. Okay. Let's go New York Jets, coming off that loss at San Francisco, but they're going to Tennessee, which is an interesting Tennessee team who I guess this is where I say my piece, boys, because, you know, I was talking about the Titans for a month and a half leading into that game, and then the ridiculous happens at the very end of it. Chicago Bears had like 148 total yards. They got into the red zone once, and the Titans don't cover. So, that's the NFL for you sometimes. It is what it is. I don't know if I can trust these Tennessee Titans, and the Jets defense probably needs some regression, but I will say about Tennessee, they looked pretty good on the ground, right? I mean, 140 yards, Tony Pollard was doing well. So maybe they're starting to figure out their offense and they have some talent there. I don't see anybody who selected this game per se as something specific to talk about. So let me go to Maddie Saint first, Jets and Titans at Tennessee.
Yeah, I just saw the lines down to 3.5. I think it opened up 4.5 yesterday. Man, this would be a normal spot that I'd like to back the Jets coming off a disappointing game last night. But, I mean, they probably just arrived home at 8 a.m. this morning, and then they have to go on the road again on Saturday. And so it's just a weird situation for them that I probably won't get involved. You know, I like their matchup against Levis. He saw just, like, how, like, turnover-prone he is. And, you know, just when he gets a little bit of pressure, his head just goes out the window, you know. So it's hard for me to back the Titans, especially as someone that got burned in every single contest play last week with them. I'm sure everybody else in this room was on them as well, as one of the consensus plays in the circuit contest. And I think it was proven that I think we were on the right side. I think bad result at the end of the day. But man, I still have in my preseason prior still with my Jets perception of the reason why I can't support the Titans. But I also don't like the situation for the Jets having a short week plus another road game right out of the gate.
Yeah, I will say from what we've seen from the Jets in the past, right, like I'm not giving a lot of credit to Robert Saleh. I think the defense has great leadership, great talent, so they kind of pick themselves up. I think Robert Saleh is, you know, perhaps a big vulnerability on this team that we don't really know a lot about, but just doesn't seem to be preparing the players in some of these big matchups across the board. But Aaron Rodgers looked good. I mean, he looked good, and so it wasn't much, but for the most part, he looked pretty good in that game, hitting Adam Lazard on a few plays as well, his former teammate over there at Green Bay. So there's some still positive things to think about the Jets, even though social media is going wild about how disappointing it was, of course. Let me go over to Matt Rutledge, Jets and Titans, week two.
I'm not playing anything. I'm still kind of pissed at the Titans franchise. I'm just good off this game, off both these teams. I'm good.
Yeah. Well, the Will Levis X factor there at the end, too. I mean, hopefully he learned after that bonehead play. Let me go to Patrick, Titans, Jets.
Yeah, I'm leaning down the over here at 41, right? We saw this Jets defense in week one. Didn't look great. C.J. Mosley came back into the game. Sauce Gardner went out for a little bit for who knows what reason. But you look at the Titans, too. So the Titans faced, obviously, the Bears in week one. The Bears have one of the best defenses in the NFL as well, and they were still able to put up 17 on them in the first half before kind of all things collapsed here. I think the Jets really kind of take this air raid offense to the next level this week, especially against the Titans defense, who I think did improve from last year, but I don't think is nearly on that same scale as the San Francisco 49ers. I think this is a low total here. I think this is probably the Jets put up at least 28, if not more. I think Tennessee can also put up 21 in this game. So I like the over at 41 in this matchup.
Interesting. I've not heard that angle before, but I could definitely see it in this one, especially even just Aaron Rodgers. Why, right? I mean, he wants to show out more. Breece Hall looked good, too. Like there, it's just the San Francisco 49ers, week one at San Fran. That's a really tough spot. Wrap us up here, Jake Cirkus.
Yeah, I'll play more numbers here. If the line keeps dropping, I could get involved with the Jets. But these are two teams I was really high on preseason, and I wasn't impressed at all with either of them in week one. I mean, was expecting the Titans to be a little more stout up front. Thought they pressured Caleb at times, but not really enough. Revamped secondary was pretty solid, but I mean, I wasn't really impressed with either of these teams, so I'll stay away. I mean, I agree with Matt that it's a, you know, could be a good buy low spot on the Jets, but not at 3.5 for me. So no real interest here, just because I was high on both these teams preseason and, you know, wasn't really excited about either of them in week one. And yeah, this is a Titans plus 4.5 vent session. I mean, just so awful, like awful. There's bad beats, and then there's what happened to the Titans, especially leading 17-0 too. Like, ugh.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's I could write a book on the variance of the NFL based on that one game alone. That's wild. Okay, let's move on. And just as a reminder, we got 6 games left. We're about an hour in. I'm impressed by the efficiency of this group because we're talking very, very, very efficiently throughout this. I'm using efficiently too much. Streamlined and seamless throughout this. But we got the Tampa Bay Bucks at the Detroit Lions. Buy signs on both of these teams, I would say. Lions at home. This has moved up to a 7 on Detroit. Of course, they had a lot of success against Tampa Bay last year. We saw that. And even on the road, right? Lions went to Tampa Bay and beat them easily, but Baker Mayfield, boy, he looks comfortable. He must have heard all the things, all the shit I was talking on him when he was on the Cleveland Browns, because he goes to Tampa Bay and he's looking like an entirely different player. Actually, he looked like a different player for the Rams too, but you know, he's got that gusto. He's like a perfect kind of, you know, blue collar quarterback for Tampa Bay, but they don't have a lot of success against these Lions, and I don't like the matchup for Tampa Bay in this one. So even at a really strong number, I would lean Detroit in this, and I think they make a pretty strong teaser leg as well. I don't see anybody. Oh, no, there is. Matty Sane, you wanted to discuss this game. Let's go. Lions, Bucks.
A circumstance. Am I muted? Oh, I'm good. So I think last week was a perfect situation for Tampa Bay going against a rookie quarterback and one of the worst defenses in the league. So I'm still not a believer in the Bucks. You know, that was one of my preseason takes. I'm still not going to come off of it after week one. I don't want to overreact to just for them beating the Commanders. And I think the Lions are better than what they showed on Sunday night. They were in control of the game, and they let their foot off by trying to actually – I shouldn't say let the foot off the gas. They actually tried to throw it when they could have just controlled the line of scrimmage with their offensive line, and the Rams were out a bunch of key defenders. They're going to come into this matchup with Tampa Bay out 4 people on secondary. And I feel like Tampa Bay's got, you know, not a great defensive line, a very average defensive line. So I think they're going to be able to control the ball. I like the over, and I actually like the Lions too. I think that they win by margin. I think that their second half was a bit of a wake-up call on Sunday night. I think I was a little disappointed in what their offensive game plan was once they got that 17-3 lead.
Yeah, just a really tough game, obviously, against the team that you beat by 1 point in the playoffs last year. So you knew that the Rams were going to bring it in that one. Matthew Stafford was electric in that second half, that's for sure. So that's probably always going to be a close battle. Doesn't exactly indicate what's going to happen the next week. And I agree. I think the Lions look even better. I think they're a top team in the NFC, projected for a reason. Like I believe all of it, and I think they're getting only better on defense as well. Let's go to Patrick on this one. Lions, Bucks. At Detroit.
Yeah, I don't have a play on this one here. I do lean Lions. I think it's just a matter of defensive and offensive line matchups here. Baker obviously went against the Commanders last week, and you look at the comparison of Detroit's defensive line, I think it's night and day. So I don't mind laying the points with Detroit in this one. That's all I got.
I like it. Matt Rutledge, what do you got?
So the Lions last year, if you don't know, when they were at home, they were just soaring. Games were soaring over. 7 out of 10 games last year. We just saw Detroit at home go under, and they needed overtime to win the game. This week, I'm taking the over. The Bucs defense looked horrible in the second half last week. the Rams scored on almost every single possession in the second half. I think they only lost that game because they didn't really get a chance at the end of it. At the end there, Baker last week looked like 2016 Oklahoma Baker. I mean, he's feeling good. He's got momentum. The Bucks look like they have good rhythm. This might be my best bet, but I'm on the over 50 here.
Yeah, looking at consensus now and this overplay, and I can't disagree with what anyone's saying, right? Baker eventually just figures it out. He makes plays happen. And can we get some kudos to Mike Evans, who's like, he's not talked about at all, right? It's all about Justin Jefferson and all these other wide receivers. Mike Evans just keeps doing it at an extremely high level every single season, no matter who his quarterback is. Jake Circus, send us home here on Tampa Bay in Detroit.
Yeah, this is on a shortlist for Survivor. A teaser, if a tout service gives out Tampa, I'll pounce on the 6.5. I think the Lions are the second best team in the NFC. I think that they have an easier schedule than the Niners, and I think they're going to get home field and get the one seed and make the Super Bowl. Danny covers, man. He covers. This is like, I'm not scared laying 7, laying 6.5 with this team. Maddie mentioned the injuries to Tampa's secondary. They're, you know, after losing Shaq Barrett, they're not great up front either in the pass rush department. And they have some guys banged up there too. And Detroit is the opposite. They're going to get DJ Reader back per this morning, as long as no more setbacks per Dan Campbell. That's huge. Just like him and McNeil and Hutchinson and Davenport, you saw him getting involved. This is a complete different Lions team than last year, and they were still covering big numbers last year. So this is probably what I'm going to take in Survivor. I'll tease him with Dallas, and if it gets under 7, I'll play him there too.
Yeah, I was annoyed that DJ didn't play in week one, because I just think he is going to be a difference maker in the sense of grabbing attention on the front, right? He is a big boy, and I think he's just going to make everybody better around him. More opportunities for Hutchinson, more opportunities for Anzalone. Is it Anzalone? Anzalone.
Yeah, and if I can say one more thing, you know, DJ Reader, when he signed with the Bengals, he was like the underrated nose tackle in the league, and then, you know, he was playing at a much higher scale. His partner on the line, McNeil, is about the same. I mean, we're going to see Lions play in these big-time games, and he is one of the best nose tackles in the – or I guess three techniques in the league. And those two guys playing together, if Reader can stay healthy, is scary on a line that already has Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah, 100%. And how about that Danny Campbell? How about that Dan Campbell Applebee's commercial? Legend. What a legend.
He covered. All right.
Let's go to Rams Cardinals. I'm seeing Patrick and Jake have circled this game. Jake, I'm going to go to you first. Why are the Rams the underdog at Arizona?
Well, I think, you know, it opened Rams -1, and then the Rams have no players left on the offensive line, and you add in Puka Nacua's injury. So it makes sense crossing through 0 here. I still think that this is the McVay spot that you can buy low, especially at a, you know, 1.5, maybe even +2, depending on if the Cardinals get some love, which I think they played well and they're at home here in divisional matchup. So I can certainly see them getting some love, but McVay, I want to get the numbers right. 13-2 straight up and against the spread in the Cardinal, against the Cardinals, 9-3 ATS as a division dog, 28-17 against the spread against divisional opponents. Outside of Shanahan, he owns this division. So this will be the spot to back McVay as a dog. I'm going to wait to see. Obviously, Alaric Jackson still suspended. Nope, Boom still hurt. So the tackles are a little bit they're for sure out, but there's a couple guards that are questionable and banged up. So I'll monitor some injuries here, but this is a spot I think that we can take the Rams at a plus price, but nothing here yet. I'll wait till later in the week on this one.
Yeah, I love that analysis, Jake. And I just want to add this. In the second half of that game at Detroit, that's when the Rams were without those offensive linemen and Puka Nacua, and Matthew Stafford went up and down that field, even with those injuries and even with that change. It did not slow down Matthew Stafford at Detroit, raucous crowd against a better defense. So, and I think you could certainly say, although Detroit might not be a top five or even top 10 defense just yet, we'll see. It's better than Arizona. So here comes Matthew Stafford and the Rams, who have owned the NFC West. They're underdogs heading to Arizona. What do you got on this one, Patrick?
Yeah, I agree with everything Jake said too. I'm on the Rams +1.5 here. I love the line movement. I was actually willing to lay the Rams -1 too when it opened around there. Yeah, I mean, the Cardinals last week, right? So the Bills' defensive line isn't great by any means. Really didn't get a ton of pressure on Kyler Murray to start the game. And maybe in the fourth quarter is when they kind of rallied and were able to sustain some pressure on him here. The Rams' defensive line, I am high on this year. I do like them a lot more, especially than the Bills. So I think they're going to kind of force more errant passes from Murray. Even when Murray had options open last week, the Bills' defense wasn't fantastic, and he still couldn't kind of make those throws. Kyler Murray's never going to be kind of one of those elite quarterbacks, and Sean McVay is kind of that perfect coach to scheme something up for the Cardinals and just kind of dominate them. So I like the Rams this week at +1.5. And so, yeah, I echo pretty much everything Jake said in this one.
I like it. Batty Saint, Rams, Cardinals. Are you on the same side as the other two? Oop. Sorry, Matt. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
No, all good. I actually have the Rams favored in my model. So I'll take the points with it. I was really impressed with the mid-game adjustments from the Rams, especially on the offensive line with all those injuries to keep Stafford upright. And they did a hell of a job just letting Stafford just have enough time to get the ball to Cooper Kupp. Like you said, they went off in the second half. I was also impressed with the Rams defense to some degree. Like I said earlier, I was disappointed in Detroit's game plan, but I also think that the Rams D also, they limited the portal. They limited Amon-Ra. They made J-Mo beat them. You look at the Cardinals, they don't have nearly the skill set. Marvin Harrison's going to be a great player. And I do like their tight end McBride. But I also just don't think that Arizona's defense has nearly as much horsepower as what they saw last week. So I think the Rams are going to be able to keep Stafford upright long enough for him to get the ball to Cooper. I think Kyren's going to be able to run the ball up the gut on Arizona. I think their interior D-line is one of the worst in the NFL. So I think that the Rams should be able to control the ball.
All right, nearly reaching consensus here about the Rams in week two. Send us home, Matt Rutledge. What do you got on this?
This isn't good because I like the Rams too. I was on the Rams. I was on the Rams last week. I'm pretty upset about it still. They should have pulled out that win. But I get why the Cardinals are favorites. You know, now you're playing a divisional game on the road. You're banged up from the Sunday night game. Cardinals covered last week. But I just don't think the Rams start out 0-2 this season. I get Puka's out, but like you mentioned, Chris, I don't think it matters. They played so well in that second half. I'm going to be on my line here. And I also think this week, somehow, I don't know what the odds are yet, but I'm going to back Marvin Harrison after last week when he did not much. And I'm going to be backing Kupp once again this week because I think he's going to get those targets that he got last week. So I'm going to be backing both of them in the Rams money line this weekend.
Yeah, people forget Cooper Kupp was banged up last season too, right? He's fully healthy now, and you can tell. You can see the difference. Puka Nacua was kind of the marquee wide receiver for them last year. That, you know, now they got two of them. I mean, as soon as Puka's healthy again, that's going to be a pretty lethal duo. All right, let's move on to talk about marquee, a big game for week two, because you do have the Cincinnati Bengals, who have always played really well against the Chiefs. Burrow has beat Mahomes more than Mahomes has beat Burrow. You don't hear that very often. You don't see that very often in the NFL, anybody against Patrick Mahomes. But now, you know, this line opened at 3, and we see Chiefs are getting 6 points. We're not getting 6 points. They are chalk of 6 points at home. Cincinnati off that bad loss. I'm sure everybody wants to talk about this one, but I know two of you have this circled, Matty Saint and Jake. So let me go to you first, Matt Saint, Bengals and Chiefs.
Man, so these are the situations you really want to attack when the market overreacts. But I have to wait to see if T. Higgins is going to play. I think they do need to have two wideouts. Otherwise, I think that the Chiefs will be able to play ball control. You're able to see Ramondre run up and down that Cincinnati defensive line, and I think Kansas City's got a much better offensive line. I think they got a comparable running back in Pacheco. So this is one where, like, initially I saw +6. I'm like, oh, you got to jump on that with Cincy. But then you dive into, like, the bottoms up of the matchup, and you're like, it's hard to get there. So I don't know. Initially I wanted to play Cincy +6, but I think that Cincinnati defense is, like, a glimmer of what they were 2 years ago. They're without DJ Reader now, who's in Detroit. You know, they lost a lot of defensive Awuzie's now in Tennessee. Like, Who do they have to stop Mahomes with all those skill players and then a really good offensive line and a good running back? So I get kind of like at first I wanted to take Cincy plus six, and now you think about it, and I might lay the hammer with the Chiefs, you know, with the turmoil going on in Cincy.
You know, it's a pretty cool thing when last year's Circa Millions winner, you're kind of thinking the same way that, you know, that he is, because I feel the same way, Matt. Like, this is one of those situations where I'm going to want to take the Bengals, right? Like, we've seen it before. Joe Burrow steps up. The whole Bengals organization seems to step up against the Chiefs. At the same time, right, no T. Higgins, perhaps. It looks like he's unlikely to play is what I'm seeing from the reports. And on both trenches, I mean, the Cincinnati offensive line is better than what it used to be. But you got to figure the Chiefs are still going to get some pressure there. Chris Jones is completely healthy and just as monstrous as always. And this is a Kansas City Chiefs team who, in my opinion, looks even better than last year. Xavier Worthy is going to be a difference maker for that team every single week. That kid is obviously pretty fast. You know, we saw him jump off the screen as soon as he touched the ball in that first matchup. So normally I'm all Bengals on this side because nobody wants to take the Bengals, and it's like easy to fade them, I guess, against the Chiefs. But I might be looking at the Chiefs in this battle too. I'm not sold just yet, but I'm getting there. Jake, you wanted to talk about this one too, Chiefs and Bengals.
Yeah, I mean, these are my Bengals.
One more thing. Yeah, Reed coming off the bye too. Sorry.
Yeah, mini bye.
That's right. Mini bye. 10 days.
You know, these are my Bengals. We had such high expectations for this year, and still do. I mean, it's kind of an unserious organization when both Chase and Higgins are playing without contracts. Now T is gonna, you know, be on the injury report every time, you know, a hamstring tweak pops up, and he's just not gonna give as much effort to try to play. But yeah, I mean, I took the six. I don't think it's gonna close at six. You know, it's not six in the contest that I'm in. I'm not sure what it's at Circa, but I mean, I think there might be some hesitancy to price the Bengals at plus six in this spot because I think it'll get taken. Situationally, this is the spot for Cincinnati. These are the spots you love. This line was 3.5 a couple days ago. I think that there were, you know, rewatching the film of the Bengals offense, it was Burrow. I mean, it was not the offensive line. He was only pressured 5 times. The receivers were open, but Burrow wasn't taking any shots down the field. He was dropping his eyes a lot at a non-existent pass rush. And I think when he sees that, he's going to be like, okay, you know, my line's improved, and, you know, got Chris Jones coming to town. So the Bengals get up for this game, whether it's at Arrowhead, whether it's at home, they always do. And I think that we're going to see a hungry Burrow because he missed this game last year with the hand injury. So now it's played earlier in the year. Bengals might get a couple players up front back from injury, but probably not. This line's moving down. It's 5.5 at FanDuel. I took the six. I don't love it, but it's a spot that I normally play. So as a volume better, I'll play it.
Yeah, hopefully this is the wake-up spot for Joe after last week. And maybe all those fashion spots and commercial, like, maybe that has an effect coming into the season, right? Like, love you, Joe. You're a handsome boy, but let's fucking get into some football here and recover. Maybe facing the Chiefs will do that. God, I'm getting fired up about this show. You guys are firing me up. Patrick, let's go to you. Chiefs and Bengals.
Big yeah, maybe the Bengals just need the backless unis. That could be the turning point for Joe Burrow and this squad. For me, I got no play in this one by any means. I'm not touching this game. It should be one of the better ones to watch, but I'm not. No play on the side or total.
Yeah, two heavyweight contenders. I mean, Bengals were my pick to win the Super Bowl heading into the season, and I will say, if the Bengals lose as expected after this week, that's the time to jump on some overs on the win total, right? And some, you know, like AFC winners, Super Bowl winners, you're going to get some great value there. Send us home, Matt Rutledge, Bengals and Chiefs. You got anything on this one?
I think people are going to look at this game and say six is a lot of points. I mean, it is for a game that should be close like this. But this is the Chiefs at home. Like I said before, the Bengals are never good in the beginning of the season. And I don't think the Chiefs lose this game. I really don't. I'm going to have Chiefs money line in a parlay somewhere here and there, probably in a two-leg, but I don't see them losing this game.
It's a pretty damn good setup for the Chiefs staying at home off of 10 days, and they look even better, right? That offensive line against Cincinnati's defensive line, I think, is a huge advantage in this one as well. All right, let's go Steelers and Broncos. Let's get a little quicker through this one since not exactly as marquee of a game, I'll put it that way. The Broncos are catching 3 points at home, opened at 40.5. Now it is down to 36.5. I believe this is the lowest total of the week. I'm going to go right back to you, Matt Rutledge. What do you got on this one, Broncos Steelers?
So I was happy last week with how my Steelers played. That game was amazing. But this week we're looking at the lowest total of the week. Steelers, another road game, so another under Eileen. But, you know, after watching this team for 10-plus years, there's two things I take away. The Steelers don't win on back-to-back road games. It just doesn't happen. And you look on the Steelers games on the road over the last however many years, the games just go under. We just rely on our defense like we did against the Falcons and hope for the best. I hate to say it, but the Broncos are my dog of the week. Fade my Steelers. The Broncos just own us. We didn't cover at home in 2021 against them when we played Jeff Driscoll, I think it was. And then the year before that, we played Case Keenum. Didn't cover. I think we actually lost outright. And then, of course, the one I never forget about is the playoff game with Tim Tebow and Demaryius Thomas for 80 yards. So the Broncos just have a history of beating us. We never win back-to-back road games, especially early on in the season. I'm going to be on the Broncos this week, unfortunately.
Wow, yeah, I'm really glad I went to you first now, Matt, because there's one thing I learned over the years with these contests especially. If someone's a fan of a team and they're fading them that week because they've seen this story before, that's something to pay attention to. So very interesting analysis. Is there anything more of a Steelers game than, like, what, 5 or 6 field goals? Just like that was one of the ugliest wins. Yeah, it's so ugly, but that's what they do.
That's
what they do. Yeah, Mike Tomlin gets the W's. That's what he does. All right, Patrick, up to you. Broncos, Steelers, what do you got here?
Yeah, I got nothing here. It's the lowest total for a reason here. Whoever starts for Pittsburgh, I'm not putting much faith into either. So, yeah, I'll keep it short. I lean under here, but I don't want to touch this game.
How about you, Jake Cirkus? Anything on this one?
This is a fun trends game. You know, we hit on Tomlin last week. Tomlin has a dog fade in the Falcons. And this is the spot that you fade Tomlin in a way favorite. He's only 42%. I don't know if I'm going to get there because I would have liked to see some more rhythm throws from Bo Nix. Didn't quite see it. But, you know, normally Denver plays really well in September because of the altitude early in the year. Hasn't been like that since they've been really bad. Like in the Manning days and the, you know, Kubiak days, they were really good in September at home. Hasn't been that way the last 4 or 5 years. But the play would be Denver at 3. Pittsburgh's defense scares me against Bo Nix, though, and that patchwork offensive line. So I don't know if I'll get there, but this is a spot where if you want to fade Tomlin, this is the spot to do it.
Yeah, Bo Nix is an interesting one, too, though, because if you compare his perception to someone like Caleb Williams, right, there's not a lot of chatter about Bo Nix, but he's showing up to work. He's buttoned up. He's doing all the right things. I like how he played at the end of that game. That game became a lot closer than it should have against the Seahawks. But, you know, maybe he's just at least starting to figure things out. Sean Payton's home opener, too, with Bo Nix. So you got to like a little, yeah, just maybe energy in the stadium, at least for that. Matty Sane, send us home on Steelers Broncos.
Yeah, no play. I'd lean Denver plus the 3. Pittsburgh's defense scares me a little bit against Bo Nix, and I think that what Pittsburgh does well on defense combats really well with what Bo Nix wants to do well. So that's why I'm going to be off of it. It just conflicts with the bottoms up versus the tops down. I just can't get there.
All right, I dig it. Let's move on to Sunday Night Football, final two games of the week. Of course, again, just a reminder to our audience, I'm seeing it climb up to the 600s now, which is so awesome. This will be available via podcast and on YouTube as well. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you to these four panel members who are really unbelievable with all the information they're bringing for every single one of these games. All right, I'm going to have to try and ease in here because I don't want to have too much bias, because I really want to hate the Chicago Bears in this matchup, guys. 148 total yards last week. Caleb Williams, look, it's not about the nails. It might be a little bit about the nails for me, but it's not about the nails. It's the fact that you're saying that you don't feel pressure. Yo, bro, you do feel pressure. Sorry, you're a fucking human being. And you're the starting quarterback of the Chicago Bears now, and it's not going to be an easy operation. This isn't going to happen overnight. They're going to Houston against CJ Stroud and an offense that looks like they're going to run the ball heavily all season and do it really well. I know it was their first game. That was a tough spot at Indianapolis. But now a team that is absolutely loaded, that you can tell buttoned up in that game, last week to kind of bring it home, right? Like, clearly the better team. Now they're going home. They're big favorites, 6.5 at most books. And the total is 45.5 to 46. So I want to take the Houston Texans very heavily here. I'm holding back for now because I'm seeing the bias in my many thoughts. Maddie Sane, I'm going to send this back to you. Texans, Bears, week two, at Houston.
Yeah, watching that Tennessee Bears game, you know, Caleb looked, just like you'd expect a rookie quarterback to look against an average to above average defense. You know, I think you go on the road now, hostile environment in Houston, they're going to be riled up. They look good other than a few really explosive plays from Richardson. I think this matchup suits Houston better defensively. So I do look towards Houston -6.5. It looks like it might creep up to 7. I think it's shaded -120 right now at Circa. So you can tell where the market's thinking. I think Houston kind of proved everybody's hype, you know, last week. I know that the Indy covered, but it wasn't pretty. It was more of a backdoor, and I think Houston could do what they wanted to do. I think the Bears defense is pretty average. I think they've got some name recognition, but you know what they did well last year was against a lot of below average quarterbacks, and now they're going to get one of the league's up and coming stars this week. They're not going to have Will Levis handing them the games this time, so I lean Houston -6.5, despite also being a little bit biased here, Chris.
It's definitely hard for me not to be a little biased. Let's go to Jake Circus. Texans being visited by the Chicago Bears.
When I came on Lane the Points, Chris, I said that I would strategically fade Houston at certain spots. This would be one of them. I don't know if I'm going to get there, but I do look at that Chicago Bears defense. They caused a lot of havoc. They were top 5 in havoc rate. Houston has a lot of guys moving around on the offensive line, so I still don't think that they're as good as what they showed against Indy in week 1. So that would be the reason why I would just take the points here. I don't know if I'm going to get there, though. I might. If it gets to 7, I could be convinced, maybe in contest. But as of now, nothing. But this would be one of those spots that I was talking about where this team, there's a huge target on their backs. Laying a full touchdown seems a little excessive. But nothing I saw from the Bears offense gives me any hope that they're going to immediately do it in a quick turnaround. Maybe rest of the year, though. But not right now.
You know, most of everyone that follows me knows that I'm not a statistician, but I know what a lot of the categories are of stats. Havoc rate? I've never heard of that one before, Jake Circus. You're bringing havoc rate.
So havoc rate is just it's not a huge analytic. It's just interceptions, forced fumbles, and tackles for loss. It's a big college stat.
Combined, got it.
Yeah, combined, divided by snaps played, something like that. Maybe it's not opponent adjusted, so it's not a crazy thing. It's just because normally like EPA per play, you can kind of base it off of who you're playing against. But havoc, if you're intercepting balls, forcing fumbles, and especially tackles for losses, like the Steelers were first in havoc rate against Atlanta, and that showed in the game, you know. But
well, you might have heard it here first, and we will continue to get smarter because of shit like that. So I appreciate it, Jake. Havoc.
I also think though that Levis was a creator of that havoc rate last week. I don't watch that game. He was not getting the ball out on time. He was holding it. He was scrambling. He was making poor decisions. Like if he was just on time, making quick decisions and not looking flustered, I think that, I don't know. It just seems like it's a misleading stat after watching that with my eyes.
Yeah, 100%. Patrick, so sorry. You actually were the only one to say that you wanted to talk about this game. So I should have started with you, Patrick. You have a play on the Texans Bears, apparently. Over to you.
Yeah, so the Texans are going to be that second leg of my 6-point teaser here. So I'm teasing Dallas down from 6.5 to 1.5, and same with Houston here. If you do a two-leg money line parlay with Houston and Dallas, it's -123. With a 6-point teaser, you're going to get -120. So a little bit of value on there for basically the same thing. That's my thought process. Like you said, Will Levis kind of threw this game away. I think the Bears defense is pretty good in itself, but CJ Stroud is a different quarterback than Will Levis. Shocker. I know. I think Houston wins this game. Not so comfortable with the 6.5 as I think the Bears could be scrappy here, but teasing them down to just kind of that money line, I do like a lot. So that's one of my plays of the week. And then I'm still debating of teasing Dallas or the Rams, making this a three leg teasing the Rams up six as well to get across that 7 to 7.5 line. So that's my thought process as well with this game.
I like it. Love that teaser leg, Patrick. Matt Rutledge, what do you got on this one? Houston Texans hosting the Bears.
I think I'm letting my emotions speak a little bit as well. Same for you, Chris, but I'm going to be on the Texans here. They're actually going to be my survivor pick of the week, and I'm going to do straight bet just on the spread here. I think the Texans are a way better team. I don't even think it's close. I was not impressed with Caleb Williams, and that's about it for me. Everybody kind of talked about it. So
yeah, I think that's plenty. Okay, great. Well, we got one game left, boys. We got Monday Night Football, and we're going to talk Atlanta Falcons at the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I'll just talk about this from a contest perspective, too. Matt's saying something I did too much last year is, I don't know, I have some bias against the Eagles, perhaps. I saw some of the, you know, chinks in the armor there. Of course, that kind of happened later in the season. But the Philadelphia Eagles looked really good week one in Brazil. I feel like Kellen Moore maybe restored some confidence in that offense. I don't know if Vic Fangio's scheme fits the Philadelphia Eagles that well. I don't know if Vic Fangio's schemes in general fit the NFL this all that well in 2024. But, you know, he probably restores confidence for them too, right? He's just a good leader in charge of them. Eagles showed up and looked good. Kirk Cousins, on the other hand, who, you know, I talked about before the week one show, no preseason action. He comes in. What does he throw for? 155 yards, two interceptions. Hashtag no surprise there for me. And now he has to go to Philly. Like, we've seen Kirk in these spots before, and it doesn't look great. So I'm building it up for the Philadelphia Eagles here. Matt Sain, what do you got in this one? Are you on the Eagles, or you think that Kirk's going to bring it?
Steelers game. So I need to rewatch that one just to see how mobile or immobile Kirk was coming off that Achilles. This reminds me a little bit of a situation last year. The Vikings had lost week one, and then they go on the road to Philly as a 6-point dog, and they found a way to cover, and they should have actually won. So this is a spot that, I don't know, the 6.5 kind of, I don't know, it seems a little bit long to me. Like, I don't, it feels like it should be more like 4.5. I might be just still kind of buying into Atlanta offensive players right now. The thing that I need to see, though, is like, how much pressure did Steelers get on Kirk, and can Philly replicate that pressure? Because I have high regards to the Falcons O-line. I just don't know if TJ Watt just dominated that game or not. I just haven't seen it with my eyes or the metrics yet. So I'm kind of staying away. 6.5 on the surface just seems like a number that Kirk historically has kind of found a way to backdoor cover in his days.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was TJ Watt. I think he had four tackles for a loss, or a few at least, one sack, a few QB hits. And I know a few of those plays, like he caused turnovers and sacks, and they got called back because of a penalty. So, you know, the TJ Watt experience is unbelievable every single week, especially when he's healthy. And that's a great point about the Eagles defensive line, who is not the same. It's not the same line as we've seen in previous seasons. Let's go to Patrick on this one. Eagles and Falcons, Philly at home in week two on Monday night.
Yeah, I'll keep it short and sweet. No play for me in this one.
Gotcha. Okay, Matt Rutledge, Eagles at home. What do you say?
Same thing. No play.
No play on this one. Jake, do you have a play, or do you have a lean at least on the Falcons and Eagles?
I don't, but I actually do have some of the numbers. Kirk was throwing the ball really quickly, so the pressures weren't high, but PFF has a metric that's called, they do their own win rate. Those were really good. So they were getting off blocks pretty well. The pressures just aren't going to be out there because Kirk was throwing the ball really, really fast. Maybe he was scared of getting hit, but he didn't really look that mobile. I have no interest in playing the Falcons here. It's still a team I want to look to fade, but 6.5 is not a bad number. It's probably about right. Nothing here for me.
All right, boys. Well, we have reached the week of week two. We love a 90-minute show, obviously, because that's what we are approaching now. Thank you so much for all the viewers who stuck with us on X and on Twitter. I mean, we're up to almost 700 now as we're nearing the end. And this is time for our best bets. I've heard, I think, one or two of you already say your best bet. I'll just get mine out initially. Patrick, love that teaser on the Houston Texans as my one leg. I'm taking Houston down 6 points. And I'm going to elevate the LA Rams 6 points and bring them up to +7.5, which to me is just disgusting. I mean, I think there's a ton of value there on the Rams, obviously money line, but you know, you tease them up 6 points and get over a key number of 7, along with the Houston Texans. So give me Texans Rams as my two-team teaser. That's my best bet of the week. Let's go first to Jake Circus. What is your best bet for week two? Oop, I got you muted, Jake.
Sorry. If the Lions go under 7, that'll be in my contest. That'll be my best bet, and I'm probably going to use it for Survivor. But based on what I have on my card, Cleveland plus 4 is my best bet.
Love it. Matt Rutledge, best bet of the week.
I already said it, but that Bucks Lions game over 50.5, it's going to be my best of the week.
Yeah, and that one has climbed sharply, and it might continue to climb too. So jump on that as soon as possible. I don't think that's going down. Patrick, best bet of the week.
Yeah, I'm going to go San Fran minus 6. So, yeah, that and obviously the teaser that you mentioned as well. So that's what I'm thinking.
Love it. History does not repeat itself in Minnesota, says Patrick. And last but not least, again, I'm going to blow you up, Matt.
Let's go.
You deserve it. Let's go. 2023 Circa Millions winner. What's your best bet of the week for week two?
I'm going to lay the wood with the Cowboys. I like Zimmer versus Carr from a defensive scheme versus offensive matchup standpoint. I think Dallas wins comfortably.
I will say Zimmer looked awfully like he was feeling himself there on the sidelines, right? He got like the shades on, you know, an old guy who can still do it. Like I kind of love that, especially coming off some head coaching stints. You know, maybe Mike Zimmer 2.0 there with Dallas. I want to thank everybody for listening to this show. I want to thank this fantastic panel. We have Jake and Patrick and Matt back again for week two, and we were joined by last year's Circa Millions champion. Thank you so much, Matt Hussain, for joining us. Please join us more this season. And please continue to listen us and watch us at the NFL Roundtable every single week on Tuesday. It's probably going to be at this time, 12 noon Eastern. Maybe some things shift a few weeks, but we will let you know about that ahead of time. Look forward to seeing this on podcast and YouTube versions. And we will see you next week for week 3. NFL Roundtable, we are out of here.